So the best causes for your Christmas offering are one-time causes. So I strongly encourage you to avoid putting ongoing expenses into your Christmas offering. So I never fund a staff person through a Christmas offering. I never fund a multiple year commitment through a Christmas offering. I never fund regular monthly expenses through the Christmas offering, like perhaps the power bill or the internet or the phone system or the lights or whatever it might be, or the copy machine. I would not fund that through the Christmas offering. But having said that, there is a way for you to take things out of next year's budget, fund those through the Christmas offering, then use the excess money that's left over in next year's budget to fund ongoing expenses. For example, let's say, and this is going to be a very generic example because all church is local, but let's say you have a big spring outreach project that you do once a year. And it could be a small outreach project if you only have a little bit of money, or it could be a giant outreach project if you have a lot of money. And for the last few years, let's say that's been in your regular budget and you've been investing $5,000 in your regular budget. But next year, you realize that you really need to use that $5,000 that's in there for the spring outreach to hire a part-time person in, say, your children's area. You're going to hire a $50 a week person. It'll cost you $2,600 over the course of a year. So what you might do is you might budget the $2,600 for your part-time person. So now you've got a $2,600 increase in next year's budget. But then you might take $2,600 from the spring evangelism event, the spring outreach, and move that to the Christmas offering. And you say, you know what? We're going to raise that $2,500 for the spring outreach in our Christmas offering. Now, you still might keep that additional $2,400 in the budget for the spring outreach because you're thinking, well, if we don't raise the Christmas offering, at least we'll be able to do something in the spring outreach. But if we raise the $2,600 through the Christmas offering, we'll do it as big as we did it the last year. So now what you did is you took a one-time event, you moved it to your Christmas offering, then you freed up budget money to pay for an ongoing event. Because the truth is, if you don't raise the $2,600, the spring event is not going to be as big as it normally is. But if you do raise it, it's just like normal, but you also have now raised some additional money for an ongoing expense. And you can do that from time to time to fund budget initiatives throughout the year. I should also tell you that there is generally an elusive fourth area that I put into my Christmas offerings, and you will see this in the promotional material that you study and adapt for your church, that I simply call capital improvements. Now, one of my mentors taught me this term, but it's a great term. So I might have missions as number one. I might have church planting as number two. I might have children as number three. And then I might have this elusive number four that I call capital improvements. And generally speaking, by the time you get to that point, people aren't that concerned about what the fourth one is. But capital improvements might be little things that need to be done around the church that we just need money for. You know, we do need to change the lights in the parking lot. We do need to put a new coat of paint. We do need to get new signage for our first-time guest table. These are one-time expenses that aren't going to touch people's heart, but they're just little improvements that you're going to make around the church. And truthfully, this is never more than 10% of our Christmas offering goal. And of course, it's the very first thing that gets cut if we don't hit our goal. It doesn't motivate people to give. Nobody gives to new light bulbs. Nobody gives to new signage, or at least very few people do. And there's actually, if you read or if you listen to my stewardship intensive, you know there's additional ways to raise money for those things through your quarterly giving statements that would not have to put them in the Christmas offering anyway. But there's always just these little things at the end of the year. You know, we might need to improve our soundboard, or we might need to improve some equipment. And that's not a heart-touching issue. So it has to go under capital improvements. But if I have the fourth area as capital improvements, then the other three have to touch people's heart. And now you may be struggling with, is this a heart issue or is it not a heart issue? Well, if you've got a group of 10 people on your stewardship team, ask them to raise their hand if they have a heart for missions. Ask them to raise their hand if they have a heart for lost people. Ask them to raise their hand if they have a heart for the needy or the heart for benevolence. And then ask them to raise their hand if they have a heart for whatever your capital improvement program is. And if there's ever anything that that gets less than a 50% heart vote, then it's not a very good initiative. You know, in a group of 10 people, there will be two or three who have a heart for getting new signage or a heart for getting new drapes. But 70%, 80% are going to have a heart for missions. It has to be something that's heart touching. And I'll tell you, this is hard for me to discern sometimes because I'm a very logical person, as you can see from this resource. I was an engineer before I went in ministry. That's why I can help you build these systems and think through things in a very systematic way. But getting the causes right and touching the heart is very, very key to being able to raise the money. You can raise some money for non-heart issues, but you can raise infinitely more money for issues that touch people's heart. So think through these causes and then prioritize what the causes are going to be, and then assign a percentage of how much of the Christmas offering is going to go to each one, and then go ahead and decide which ones will not be funded if you don't hit your Christmas goal, and then decide which ones will be funded in a bigger way when you do hit your Christmas goal. So as I mentioned, the first one or two of our causes, missions and church planting, or missions and say evangelism, that is going to be funded in excess when we exceed our Christmas offering goal, because the amount we give over and above our Christmas offering goal will be divided between our top calls and our regular budget. Now, just to get real practical into how this works, let me talk about it. Let's say your Christmas offering goal is $100,000, and then you raise $110,000. Well, first of all, way to go. You raised $110,000. You exceeded your goal by 10%. That 10%, that $10,000 over and above your goal, in my definition, in my communication to the church, is going to be divided this way. $5,000 of that will go to the very first cause in our list. The other $5,000 will go into the general budget. It will go into the income expense for the general budget in the coming year. So it's treated just as if it's regular tithes and offerings. Now, from a accounting standpoint, it's marked as Christmas offering. The people who gave it receive a statement that says they gave it to the Christmas offering. But from a budgetary standpoint, it's marked as income in next year's budget. And then the other $5,000, the other half of that, is then given to missions. And so maybe we're able to give extra money to international missions or extra money to a missionary. So perhaps we promised a missionary $500 a month for the next year, but now we're able to give them $575 or whatever the math would work out to be. You can do the math. But it doesn't all go to the causes. Instead, some of it goes to the budget. Now, you can choose not to do this. You can choose to say everything that's given over and above the goal will be divided according to our percentages for these causes. But I have found it to be effective and healthier to say anything that's given over and above the budget will be divided through cause number one and the regular budget. And this keeps you from being in a situation where your Christmas offering goal is exceeded tremendously, but then perhaps regular giving is hurt in a certain way. Now, as I mentioned earlier, generally speaking, regular giving is not impacted at all through the Christmas offering. But if you're doing it for the first time, or if you're doing it with a very particular heart cause that a large group of people who you underestimated have a heart for a certain issue, then you don't want to put yourself in a corner where that would hurt your next year's budget. Because most importantly, you've got to make sure you hit the budget. Second to that, you want to make sure you hit the Christmas offering. So I hope that'll be helpful to you as you think about how you might do that. Now, the key issue is, do these touch a heart? So right now, in your listener's guide, start making a list. And this can be an initial list. Make a list, check it twice, see which items are naughty and nice. Sorry, I can't resist. It's the Christmas offering. You're just going to have to live with it. But the good news is we're almost done defining our clauses. Ha ha, get it? Clauses? Okay, we're almost done defining our causes, but you want to think this through and pray this through. And then I want to give you a little bit of freedom. I am not a denominational executive, and so I want to tell you that you do not have to support every single cause the denomination asks you to support. If you are inclined to do so, then by all means, do so. But I want you to define the causes that God is telling you to support. And I'm not saying that your denomination initiatives are in conflict with that. I'm pro-denomination. I'm not anti-anything. I'm pro-everything. I'm pro-non-denominational. But I want you to make sure these are your initiatives that work for your church, because you're the one that's going to have to lead this inside of your church. So determine the what's. Okay, thank you for staying with me this far. I can tell you're interested, and I believe you're going to have a very successful Christmas offering. So let me just review a few of the steps that we've talked about so far. First of all, we've talked about you need to decide the start and end date of your Christmas offerings. Hopefully by now, you're beginning to have a picture. You need to know particularly your kickoff date well in advance so you can start building to it. Then by now, perhaps you've set your goal for your Christmas offering. You say, this is the amount of money that we're going to try to raise. And related to that, you've made this list of whys. Here's why we want to raise this money, and here's why we believe God is calling us to do it. And then I hope you also have your very specific causes now in front of you. These are the causes that we're going to use in our, these are the causes we're going to give to in our Christmas offering. Now, I want to tell you, as I mentioned, I have decided that the middle of November is the best time for me to kick off our Christmas offering. And then I let that Christmas offering run through the end of January. And as you look at the promotional material and you look at the sample documents that I'm giving you, you have permission to adapt those to your church and use those to your church. And the files that I've given you are the files that I have. So we may not have the original illustrator or original graphic design documents, but you can redesign what I've given you. And I really want you to do that anyway, because I want you to interact with every single piece of the literature that I'm giving you. And even though I'm giving you a jump start by giving you the letters and giving you the offering envelopes and giving you the printed samples and giving you even the, what the packet looks like, I want you to adapt that for your church and adjust that. So as you go along, you'll see that you may need to adjust even the name of the Christmas offering. You may simply call it the Christmas offering. I know one church that calls it the annual offering, and there's nothing wrong with that. We've often given ours a name like Beyond the City or Now is the Time, and you'll see some examples for that as you go along as well. But you then adapt this information, and you change the goal, you change the start date. You may even want to change the scriptures, or perhaps you want to change the version of the scriptures. The scripture you want to use is the same one I'm using, but you want to change the translation of that as well. So all that can be very important as you go through, work through these steps. And then remember, at the end, we're going to look at this 40-point checklist, and you'll be able to download that. You'll be able to adjust the dates for your church, and you'll be able to work through it in a very step-by-step specific way. So I want to thank you for taking this seriously, and I want to thank you for catching up and staying with me and utilizing this in your church. And again, I believe that you're going to have a very, very effective Christmas offering. So now that we've decided all of that, let's talk about how we're going to promote our Christmas offering. You see, now that you've done this initial work, now you're ready to start motivating your people to participate in the offering. And so on the Sunday before the kickoff, you want to have your promotional materials ready. The basic promotional material that I put together, or at least the foundational promotional material I put together, is found in the resources area. It is a letter from me. Actually, let me describe it this way. It is a promotional packet. So you see here in your listener's guide, here's what's included in the promotional packet. And once I have this promotional packet prepared, I can then modify pieces of that for all the other areas of promotion as well. But the first thing I put together is this promotional packet. That includes a letter from me. It is a one-page letter on church stationery that gives you an overview of the Christmas offering. So on the resources area, either of the CD or of the download or however you might be getting this delivered to you. And my team is so creative. There's all kinds of ways they deliver this information to you. But look for the section about the promotional packet, and then you'll see the introductory letter from me. And I've crafted this letters over the years, and quite frankly, you can simply take this letter, modify it to fit your church, change my name to your name, and you have permission to use it. In fact, every single resource that we're giving you, you have permission to use in your local church. I just ask that you use it with integrity and use it well. Then the second thing I put together is a two-page overview sheet. And this is a front and back sheet that describes the causes and that gives some detail about each one. The goal of this overview sheet is to touch as many people's hearts as I can, to touch their heart for mission, to touch their heart for children's ministry, to touch their heart for church planting. But it is the two-page quick overview. So if somebody reads the letter and they read the two-page overview, then they're going to go well. They're going to be well on their way to wanting to give to this. Then I have a longer set of documents that are the Q&A pages. And the Q&A pages simply answer questions that people might have about the Christmas offering. So over the years, I have developed ongoing Q&A. I've collected questions, and here's what are the most common questions that people ask, and then I answer that in this Q&A document. And some years it's short, some years it's long, and you'll see examples of that as we go. But people learn in different ways. Some people, they immediately give through the letter. Other people need the overview packet. And then, of course, a certain number of people need the Q&A pages. And then in addition to what I put in that promotion packet, I put the giving envelope, which I want to come back to in a few moments and talk about. And then I fold all of that in a very appropriate way, and I put it inside a 6x9 envelope that focuses on the Christmas offering. You'll see examples of that and what that looks like. And then occasionally I will even put a DVD inside of there, but I say that's optional because I don't want you to get too caught up on the video. Now, when you think about promotion, I want you to understand that there are three types of people in your church regarding promotion. The first type of people are the people that are going to give to anything you ask them to give. And there is a sizable number of people inside of your church, particularly if you've been at the church for a while or if your church has a history of being generous. There is generally a large group of people that are going to give. I know in my church, there's probably 20% of the people who will give to whatever the cause is, as long as it's within reason, regardless of why I'm asking them to do it. And if I just say, we're doing a Christmas offering for missions, bring your best gift next week, 20% of the people will do that. So on the one end, there's a group of people that are going to give just because you ask them to give. Now, this packet is important to them, but they're just going to read the letter. They're just going to read perhaps the two-page overview, and they're going to decide to give. Then on the other end of the spectrum, there are people who will never give. And there's 20% of your church, perhaps, that will never give to a special Christmas offering. They're just not going to do it. And it doesn't matter what kind of package you have. It doesn't matter how extravagant you promote it. It doesn't matter how good you preach on it. They may not in a cent. They may not rise up and rebel against you, but they're just simply not going to give. So just understand it. But then in the middle, there is a large group of people that want to give. They just need enough information or enough motivation to give. And so when you're preparing this packet and you're preparing your promotion and the different avenues we're going to look at in just a moment, you really are going after that large middle section of people who need to be motivated to give. So you've got your committed givers on the one end. On the other end, you've got your non-givers. And then in the middle, you've got this group of people who need to be motivated to give. And so everything that you're doing in the way of promotion is for those who need to be motivated. And so they need a letter from you. They need the two-page overview. They need to read the Q&A. They need to hear you teach on it and preach on it. They need to see it in the email newsletter. They need to get different packets in the mail. They need to hear testimonies on Sunday. So everything you're going for is for that vast middle. Because look, you're automatically going to get the first type of people, the people who give to anything. And then you're never going to get the people who give to nothing. So your goal is to convince the people in the middle why they need to give. And so this packet will help you do that. Now, a big part of this packet and a very underestimated piece of this packet is the giving envelope. And so I want you to look at that giving envelope, and I want you to look at it in detail. And in fact, we have made an arrangement with a printer that can help you get these giving envelopes, and you will find their contact information in the resources area as well. But this Christmas envelope that we have, it's a big envelope. It's actually 9 inches wide by 4 inches tall. And then that's folded. And so it actually has a flap when you unfold it. And so you see here the mailer side of that envelope, and you'll notice that it's postage paid. And we do that because that makes it easy for people to give. People don't have stamps anymore. They don't mail a lot of things anymore. So we want to make it easy for them to give. And then the flap on one side contains our logo, and on the other side it contains the Christmas offering. And depending on which one you're looking at, you generally see the logo for the Christmas offering. You don't need a special logo. It could simply say the Christmas offering. You see the timeline, which on our envelopes we simply say is now through, So now through January 31 of the following year, because we want this offering envelope to have shelf life, so we give it out on the first Sunday. Actually, we give it out on the Sunday before we start the Christmas offering, and we say it starts next week. But then we continue to use that offering throughout the end of November, throughout December, and then, of course, into early January. So we want it to have shelf life, so we simply have said now through January 31. Then you see our goal, and then you see a couple of statements about that. On the flip side, on the inside of the envelope, so to speak, then what you see there, once again, is our normal offering envelope explanation that talks about why you should give from 2 Corinthians 9:7. It gives the options for giving. But then you'll notice on the right-hand side, we lay out the different areas of the Christmas offering. So once again, it says Christmas offering. It says now through January 31. It's got the goal, but then you see the clauses. And depending on which one you're looking at, the first cause is going to be missions. The second cause is going to be evangelism. The next cause is going to be poor and needy. The final cause is going to be benevolence and counseling. And then occasionally you will notice, because we have an advanced system, we might even have 5 causes or even 6 causes. But the point is, you lay that out on your offering envelope. And then you want to put one of these offering envelopes in every bulletin. And so you can mail these out in your packet. And then you want to put one in every bulletin as well. And then, of course, you see the heart of the envelope, which is you have one envelope for giving your tithes and offerings and giving to the Christmas offering. And I'm telling you, if you will do this combined envelope and go ahead and invest the money to print this envelope, then that's going to help you, because you may invest a half of a percentage or even 1% of your Christmas offering goal in this envelope, but it's going to help you raise far more than it will cost you. And so I think of this as an investment. You know, in the old days, it was we had one envelope for tithes and offerings and one envelope for the Christmas offering. And if that's all you can do, that's all you can do. You know, that's better than nothing. But if you can produce an envelope like I'm showing you here, like a combined envelope, it's really going to help you. And if you contact the printer that we work with, and that's in the resource area of this material, and perhaps even here in the listener's guide too, then that will allow you to contact them and you say, look, I want to do an offering envelope like the Journey does, and then they have permission to adapt this envelope to your church. And so you might want to take a look at that. But you need this envelope, and don't underestimate it. It's going to go in your promotion packet that we just talked about. It's going to go in the bulletin every week that you're promoting your Christmas offering, including the week before you start your Christmas offering. Then it's going to be something that you would then hand out at membership or have available at the resource table, or even adapt and modify for online giving along the way. So that offering envelope is very important. Now, in addition to that, you may have noticed that I said that there's an optional video. We do occasionally produce videos that promote the different causes in our Christmas offering. So if we have a missionary that we're supporting in a distant land, we might do a video with them and show that in our service. I have occasionally done these overview videos, and we have some samples of that for you to watch in the resources area. I tell you this cautiously, because I'm saying you don't have to do this. Sometimes we get so caught up on making a very emotional, heart-touching, or even funny video that we spend all of our time producing the video, and then we ignore all of these other elements. So what I'm saying is, if you can do the video, it will add 5-10%. It might even help you explain things better on a Sunday. It might keep things a little tighter in the worship service when you're rolling out the Christmas offering. But 95% of the fruit of your Christmas offering is found in these other, dare I say it, less sexy promotional vehicles, like the promotion packet, like the email newsletter, like using your third quarter giving statements to talk about the Christmas offering, like testimonies from stage, like mobilizing your small groups, and all the other things that you can do regarding your Christmas offering. So take a look at our videos. Maybe you find one that you could easily do in your church. And I do almost every year do a 5-minute video that gives an overview of our different Christmas offering areas. But don't get so caught up on that. Don't think that's more important than it is. Again, I caution you. People get excited about the video, and then they ignore or don't get excited about the promotion packet when the promotion packet becomes so key. Because the promotion packet contains within it language that you're going to use in your bulletin, language that you're going to use on your website, language that you're going to use in promoting the Christmas offering from stage. And so that's very important. And when we get to the checklist a little bit later on, you're going to see exactly how important this is. So start with the promotion packet. And then once you have that, you then want to begin to do a multifaceted approach to communicate the Christmas offering to your church. So for example, you want to promote it on Sunday. So the Sunday before you are starting your Christmas offering, you need to take 5 to 7 minutes inside the service and promote the Christmas offering. You can do that by handing out packets and then asking people to open the packets. You can then read the letter to them from the stage. You can then highlight every element in the two-page overview. And then you can then draw their attention to the Q&A and have them take notice of this new envelope. And that can be very exciting. You hand that out to people as they enter. You then have some songs. You come up, and I think the lead pastor needs to do this. You introduce the Christmas offering, you cast vision for it, you pray for it, and you challenge people to bring their first gift the following week. I'm not going to repeat that. Instead, you can just go back and listen to that process again as I lay it out. And then, of course, you'll see that again in the checklist that we're going to look at. But you introduce it on Sunday. Then that same week, leading up to your first week of the Christmas offering, you would mail these packets out. In fact, I'll go ahead and tell you, I mail the promotion packet out twice. I mail it out the week before the Christmas offering starts. And then because our Christmas offering continues through January, I do a modified version of the packet and I mail that out so that people get it after January 1. So I want them to have it on January 2nd, January 3rd, January 4th, as close as I can to the beginning of the new year. And what we found is that about 50% of our offering comes in before December 31, and then the other 50% comes in after December 31 in the month of January. And so I want them to get an updated packet. I may change the look of it just a bit. I definitely update the letter to tell them, hey, we're halfway there. And you'll see examples of this as well in the documents that I'm giving you. But you want to mail that packet. You want to talk about it on Sunday. Then you want to, if you can, develop a special website. So it would be your website / Christmas offering. Or if you have a special name for the Christmas offering, it would be / whatever that is. And there you would put that letter from you on there. If you have the video, you would put that on there. You'd put the two-page overview document on there. You'd put the Q&A pages on there. And you would put a link to online giving on there if you have that available in your church. Then you'll take certain elements of that. And each week in your email newsletter, you might highlight different areas. So for me, the first week, I give an overview of the Christmas offering. Second week, I give another overview of the Christmas offering. Third week, I start talking about the first specific cause. Second week, I talk about the second cause of the Christmas offering. Third, or now I'm up to the fifth week, I believe. I lost a little count there myself. You look in your notes, you'll see this a little clearer. I talk about the next cause of the Christmas offering. And so what happens is over the course of 10 weeks, I've introduced the Christmas offering 2 or 3 times. I've talked about each of the causes. I've given an update on where we stand financially. I've given a testimony of someone who's given to the Christmas offering. And I use my 10 weeks of newsletters to talk about the Christmas offering as well. Now, we do an email newsletter. You may not do that, but that's another tool that you have. You can also use your social media sites and other things to update people on the Christmas offering. Then as you think about your giving statements, you can use that to talk about Christmas offerings as well. Again, I go into great detail on this in the Stewardship Intensive, but if you do a third quarter giving statement that hits at the latter part of October, then you can use that to introduce the themes of your Christmas offering and to introduce the goal and to give people the start date. Then all of us do an end of the year Christmas offering, or excuse me, an end of the year giving statement. And so in my end of the year giving statement, I try to get that out early so that I can talk that up as well. And then you want to talk it up from the stage. In addition to what you did on that first Sunday, each week throughout your promotion period, you want to have a moment or two in the service where you have a testimony about one of the big causes. You have people who share why they are giving to the Christmas offering, and perhaps you even share your story as well. Connected to that, we take 1 week in December. And we ask all of our small groups to hand out this promotion packet, and we ask each of our small group leaders to go through that packet with their small group and to challenge their people to give and to share a testimony for how they are going to give to the Christmas offering and why they are excited. And then, of course, any events or activities that we do. I do some advanced stuff at our church, for example. If you know my top 10% principle that I talk about in the assimilation seminar and in the leadership seminar, I invite each year in December, I invite the top 10% of my church to a Christmas party. This is the top 10% of givers, the top 10% of volunteers, the top 10% of members, the top 10% of group leaders. It's a very special invitation. It's people that have worked hard all year, and I invite them to a Christmas party. And the thrust of that Christmas party is not about the Christmas offering. It's about thanking them for giving and thanking them for serving. It's about having fun. It's a party-like atmosphere where we have a really good time. It's a two-hour party that we do after our final morning service on a Sunday. And so people look forward to that. But during that leaders' party, I do take a moment to talk to them about the Christmas offering. And in fact, over the years, our Christmas party has become such a big deal, we've actually moved it earlier and earlier. And so now we actually generally do our Christmas party in November. It seems weird to do it at that particular time, but that just works better for people's schedules and our culture. So we have a Christmas in November party, usually the second Sunday in November. It's for all of this top 10% of our leaders. So it's a large group of people, and we just have fun. And we obviously talk about what's going to happen in our church around Christmas, and I introduce the Christmas offering, and then I challenge them to pray for our Christmas offering, and I challenge them to lead the way with the Christmas offering. So wherever I can, I talk this up. Now, this doesn't mean that it dominates everything that we do over the course of those 10 weeks. You know, along the way, we've got Thanksgiving going on. We've got a new Christmas series starting. We've got Christmas Eve services that we're building up for. So I have to be careful that I think through how I'm going to promote it, but I make sure that I do everything I can to get the word out. Because once again, I'm not trying to do so much to convince those non-givers, because it doesn't matter how much I do, I'm not going to convince the non-givers. I can mail the packet out 15 times, and those people who are not going to give are not going to give. Then the people who are going to give, they're going to give. They don't need a lot of promotion. They need a packet. They need a couple of strong reasons why they're going to give. So I do this extra effort for that large middle group who are unconvinced, but with enough information and enough motivation, they can give. Now, part of your promotion is also being clear about how people give. So how will you let people give? Well, there's at least three methods that we use for giving, and then a fourth one that I'll suggest to you for your consideration, and then I'll let you add in additional ones. For example, we, of course, invite people to give to the Christmas offering at the Sunday services. So they give to the Christmas offering at the Sunday service. We're promoting it at the Sunday service. We're giving out these packets at the Sunday service. And we always have the packets available, by the way. So if we hand them out the Sunday before we start the Christmas offering. We hand them out the day of the Christmas offering that it begins. And then, of course, we have the packets available. And the Christmas offering envelopes are always in the program. So we allow people to give on Sundays, of course. Then we allow people to give by mailing in their gifts. And you notice earlier that the Christmas offering envelope, like our regular offering envelope, is postage paid, and you mail it in, send it in via the postal service. And so that's a way that people give, and a lot of gifts come in that way. In fact, business people especially like to give this way. They take that offering envelope home with them, or they open up that promotion packet they get in the mail, they mail it in. Then we let people give online. We have online giving, and so people can give securely through our website. And during the Christmas offering focus time, there's a box that they can check to say, this is for the Christmas offering. Then a special way that we have for people to give is what we call in-kind gifts. And this is a very significant way of giving that I go into in more detail in the stewardship intensive, but it does fit here with the Christmas offering. It's where you allow people to give an in-kind gift. They can donate stocks or bonds to your church, and they get a special tax deduction for doing so. And then, of course, you in turn work with a broker. You can have a partnership with a broker in your city, and they will then sell that stock or sell those bonds, and that money will go to your Christmas offering. At other times, people have given land, or they've even given deeds to property that they own through the Christmas offering. It's a way for them to give an in-kind gift. We generally accept most any in-kind gifts. But I suppose there is a scenario where we might not be able to take the in-kind gifts just because we wouldn't know what to do with it. I suppose if somebody wanted to give us a giraffe, we wouldn't know how to just get rid of that giraffe, sell that giraffe or whatever, and take the money. But generally speaking, this is stocks and bonds that people give in-kind, or it might even be real estate that they give, or significant pieces of property that they own, such as cars or even deeds to certain property that they might give, that then we in turn can then sell. And of course, the goal is for us to immediately liquidate these gifts and use that money for the Christmas offering, because we're not in the business of holding real estate or holding on to stocks and bonds. And so don't buy into the idea that if we hold on to it, it might go up. In essence, you need to liquidate that as quickly as possible and free that money up for these kingdom purposes that you're trying to use. Now, perhaps you can also think of other methods for how people might give at your church. And you can think about that according to your individual church culture and figure that out. But these promotional materials and being clear about how people are going to give, and then as you're going to see in the checklist, having a specific plan for how you're going to promote Sunday to Sunday to Sunday is very powerful when it comes to raising up the Christmas offering. Many Christmas offerings fail in this step because the promotion isn't clear, because the communication isn't clear. And so what I encourage you to do is to take my promotion packet, adapt that to your church for the first year. Take my checklist that I'm going to give you, which is really a calendar of what to do each and every day leading up to your Christmas offering and through your Christmas offering, adapt that for your church, and then work that plan. And if you can't do everything I'm talking about, that's okay. Just do the promotion packet and do the offering envelope. If you can't do anything else, the promotion packet and the offering envelope. And then you can build it out by doing each of these specific areas. One other thing I should talk about in regards to promotion is regarding the kickoff Sunday. And so the kickoff Sunday is very important. Now, we generally start this in the middle of November. And so that becomes a kickoff Sunday for us. So as I mentioned, the Sunday before the kickoff, we give out these promotion packets. We hold it up on stage. We invite people to read it and take a look at it. We might even show that video if I have it available by then. And then the next Sunday, if possible, on the kickoff Sunday, I work the Christmas offering into my sermon. And I'm going to give you some examples of sermons that we've done, including an entire series that we did called Beyond the City that just relates to the Christmas offering. So this kickoff Sunday becomes very, very important. Now, it doesn't mean that that entire Sunday has to just be focused on your Christmas offering. You may be in a teaching series, or you may be having a special two-part series on Thanksgiving or whatever it might be, but it does mean you give some time, 5 minutes in the welcome, or 5 to 10 minutes in the sermon if you can, and then maybe 5 minutes for the video if that works out for you as well. But make sure you plan through that kickoff Sunday, because getting your Christmas offering off to a good start is very key. It will also give you some immediate feedback, because the first Sunday out of the gate, you're going to be able to tell, is there an excitement? Is there buzz? Are people asking questions? And if they're asking questions, then you answer those questions in the upcoming email newsletter or in the following week's service. Now, I don't have any good percentages to tell you as to how much can be raised in that first service. We've had some Christmas offerings that get off with a bang. I introduce it the week before by giving the packet. Then we have the kickoff Sunday, and that first Sunday, people bring their first and best gifts. And you'll notice in some of my promotional material, I use that language. I say, bring your first and best gift next Sunday as this Christmas offering begins. And sometimes within 7 days of kicking off our Christmas offering, we're 10, 20% toward our goal. Other times, it begins with a whimper. You know, we have that first Sunday, people are excited, but for whatever reason, they didn't bring their gifts. So some of our Christmas offering goals are hit by having big Sundays and then another big Sunday and then a big Christmas service and then another big Sunday. And so over the course of 4 or 5 big Sundays, we hit the goal. But most of the time, our Christmas offering is a plodder. It's like the turtle, you know, not the hare. It starts out slowly. First week, we have 3, 4, 5% of our goal is given. Next week, we pick up another 2 or 3%. Next week, we pick up another 5 or 6%. Then toward the end of the year, we might pick up 10 to 20% of that. And we end the year 50% toward our goal. And then in January, first Sunday of January, maybe 5 to 10% is given. Second Sunday of January, we might get 25%. So now we're 75% toward our goal. And then those last two Sundays, we hit our goal. So you want to watch that Sunday, but you don't want to live and die by the kickoff Sunday. But let it give you feedback. Let it show you what you need to adjust. Let it tell you what you need to better communicate. Let it show you what questions you need to ask. And so that's very important when it comes to your promotion. And once again, I reference the fact that you should look at my promotional material And then as your first time out of the gate, you will want to adapt that. And then, of course, in the checklist, we're going to go over step by step when you lay out this promotional material. But maybe for the sake of now, since this is where we are, you might be asking, what does that calendar for promotion look like? And so I want to talk to you about that for just a moment. So here it is in basic form, without getting into everything from the checklist. 10 days before your kickoff, you want to send out an offering information packet. We've talked about that. 1 week before your kickoff, you want to work the offering into your sermon or work it into the announcements. Highlight the causes. Encourage people to bring their best gift on the first day. And then there's the kickoff weekend. You want to announce the kickoff with enthusiasm. Highlight the causes. Preach on it if you can. And then every weekend through December, continue to mention the offering briefly. Highlight the causes. Toward the end of the month, create a fresh sense of urgency for that year-end giving. And then the first Sunday in January, announce a 2 to 4 week offering extension, or just remind people that it's going to be extended or that it continues. I'll talk about that extension a little bit later, but for now, if you've said it's going to go through the end of January, you don't need to announce an extension, and I actually encourage you just to go ahead and say it on the front end. Then late January, early February, announce the total amount of money raised, celebrate, send out thank you letters, and then ongoing throughout the year, you update your people on how their money is being used. Now, some of those you will see a little bit later, but that gives you a sense as to what this planning should look like, and then you can take that plus the checklist we're going to look at later, and you can begin to really see how this Christmas offering works over the course of time and can work greatly in your church as something that God can use. But it does, in many ways, rise and fall on promotion. And so you want to think this through very, very clearly. But let me just remind you of the story I told you earlier. If you can't do anything else but write the letter and send it out to a few key people inside of your church and invite them to bring a special offering and just simply mark it in the section on their check where they can say what it's for, then you will raise some money. And then if you can improve that and eventually do this very detailed system that we're talking about, you can raise significant money for the kingdom and see a large number of people in your church grow. But you adapt this and say, this is what we can do. And don't let the fact that you can't do everything keep you from doing something. Because I think you would agree, it's better to mobilize some people to give. It's better to mobilize some people to grow. And it's better to engage some areas in our church to engage nothing. So don't let the paralysis of I can't do everything keep you from doing nothing. Do what you can. Take from this resource. Implement what you can. And you do what you can with God's blessing this year, then you will be able to do even more and more and more over the next year. Let's talk now about the who of the Christmas offering, and with apologies to the people who live in Whoville and the Grinch, let's talk about the who for just a moment. As you think about your promotion, you think about the success of the Christmas offering, who is going to give and who do you need to communicate to? Well, let me just say very strongly, and this is a relative short section here, but let me just say strongly, Pastor, you need to lead the way. One of the keys in an effective Christmas offering is making sure that the leaders of the church model the sacrificial giving you hope to see from your people. So, Pastor, as you talk about the offering from stage, make sure you tell your people that you're planning to give. You don't need to disclose how much, but you want to put yourself in the position of being able to give an authentic testimony of your own sacrifice. Tell them that you and your spouse have been praying over how much to give. And how every time you pray, God continues to stretch you beyond what you think you can do. Tell them that your children, if they're old enough or doing chores or they've set aside a little piggy bank for the Christmas offering, they're going to raise their own money to give. And of course, make sure all that's true. Just share authentically what you're doing. You see, you as the pastor have to be fully engaged in what you're proposing. And there's nothing more powerful than an authentic leader who says, I've given, you can give, let's give together. And on the same note, talk with your key staff and leaders about giving. Make sure they're on board. Those of you that may be listening who aren't senior pastors, I want to challenge you to model sacrificial giving as well through this Christmas offering. You see, you can't expect your church to do something you as the leaders aren't willing to do. You know, at The Journey, we do hold our staff accountable for giving to the Christmas offering. We don't hold them accountable for how much, but we hold them accountable for giving something. And so everybody can give a dollar. Most people give, of course, much more than that, but we challenge them to give. And then the same thing with your key volunteer leadership. At your different volunteer meetings, whether it's on Sunday morning when you're meeting with the ushers or the parking lot people or the greeters or the worship arts team, talk up the Christmas offering there as well. And have your worship pastor challenge the people on the worship team to give. Have your volunteer leaders challenge the volunteers to give. Have your small group leaders challenge the small group leaders to give. And then you might even do special communication to the church when it comes to your membership. You might write one letter to your non-members, then you might write a more challenging email or letter to your members. But you've got to stretch people. You've got to encourage them to give sacrificially. There might even be an occasion where you need to have some one-on-one conversations, probably with your staff. You can do it one-on-many, but maybe there's some people you feel led to talk to one-on-one regarding this. Do that cautiously, do it prayerfully, but it might be something you want to do. But the point is, the who is important. And if it doesn't start with the top leadership, the most important leaders in your church, then it's never going to be pervasive in your church. So giving to the Christmas offering really stretches you as a leader. You know, every year in my church, I think that I'm not going to be able to give as much as the year before. Because I look back and I say, God stretched me so much last year. How am I going to do that this year? But we know that the end of the year, of course, is tough for pastors as well, because we have bills and we have things we're planning for, and we're not exactly making a ton of money when it comes to giving either. But each Christmas season, I found God gives me a specific number that stretches me, and He puts it on my heart to give that in the offering. And without fail, it's always a bigger number than I was thinking. But if I consistently give and I trust God and I start the first week and then I give the second week, I found without fail, He always provides. And each year I've had my faith stretched and I've grown to be able to make this particular offering to our church and then to stand before our people authentically and challenge them to give as well. And remember, when it comes to this type of giving, it's not about equal gifts. There are people in my church, there are people in your church who can give far more than you can. So it's not about the number of zeros on the gift. It's about equal sacrifice. So for some people, giving a $10 gift to this Christmas offering will be a great sacrifice. For others, to give a $10,000 gift would not be a sacrifice. So the issue is equal sacrifice, not equal gifts. And so if you lead the way, you as the pastor, you as the staff who are listening, you as key volunteers and lay people in the church who are listening, if you lead the way, I assure you the church will follow. But if you don't step up to the plate, it's going to be an uphill battle getting the church to follow. So right now, I want you to pray and say, God, how much do you want me to give? What should I give to this Christmas offering? How do you want to stretch me? I want to pick up this issue now that I've talked about regarding, does the Christmas offering end on December 31, or do you allow it to go into January 31? And at our church, we just automatically announce that our Christmas offering is going to go through January 31. We do that because there's a number of who's in the church, there's a number of people in the church who will not be able to give sacrificially until the beginning of the year. Now, many, many people will want to give before December 31 for tax purposes. And so you'll have small business owners, you'll have people who want to give for tax purposes at the end of the year. So you want to do certainly a push toward December 31. And that is a significant reason for you to end your offering on December 31. And you may decide at the beginning of this Christmas offering process that your Christmas offering is going to go through December 31. But then, if there are legitimately people who come to you, one, two, or even three families that come to you and say, Pastor, I know you said this was going to go through December 31, but can I give into January? I have this circumstance or I have this issue that I cannot give before December 31, but come January 15th, I can give, or come January 20th, I can give. If you have enough people ask you to do that, you may decide to officially extend your offering into the beginning of the year. And so with integrity, if you can stand up and say, people have asked me if we can do it, and so I'm going to do it. Now, you don't do this because you did not reach your goal. You only do it because there are people who want to extend it. And then, of course, over time, if year after year you have people asking you and asking you and asking you, what you want to do in your planning is just go ahead and extend it. But extending your Christmas offering goal because you didn't, or extending your Christmas offering date because you didn't hit your goal is not the way to live. Instead, if you didn't hit your goal, you just simply want to end it. I'll talk about that in just a moment. But if there are people who would ask, can I give into the new year? Then you have a decision to make. You may decide to say, hey, you can give, but not change the date. You may just say you can give and then we will apply it to the Christmas offering, and then you wait to the end of the month and announce that goal. So on the one hand, just because people want to give into the new year doesn't mean you have to extend the Christmas offering for the entire church. You can just say, hey, the three of you can give and we'll mark it as part of the Christmas offering. Or you can choose to extend it. Or if you learn, as I've learned, that in our church, we have as much as 25 to 30% of the people in our church who want to give after January, then you can decide to extend it. Now, what happens if you don't hit your goal? If you don't hit your goal and the date is approaching, you simply celebrate how much you have received. So if your goal was $10,000 by December 31 and you've raised $8,500 by December 31, you simply announce in January, congratulations, we raised $8,500. Truthfully, I've never felt like I need to go back and restate the goal. You know, a lot of times when I work with churches and I see this happen and we talk about it and we say, okay, you know, you didn't hit your goal. What do we need to do? You know, the pastors will say, well, let's extend it. Let me give it another week. Let me give people one more shot. I say, don't do that. I say, let the offering end. And then when you announce how much was raised, have people applaud for how much was raised, not for how you missed your goal. So in other words, if I had a goal of 10,000 on December 31, I raised $8,500. I have to make the announcement the second week of January. I would not say our goal was our goal was 10,000 and we raised $8,500. I would simply say, I want to thank everybody who gave. Believe it or not, our church, we raised $8,500 in the Christmas offering goal. You know, by that point, there might be a few who remember that your goal was $10,000, but most people have long forgotten that goal, and they're not worried about that anyway. They're just focused on the $8,500 that you did raise. So when the date comes, you end it, unless there is compelling reasons to extend it for perhaps no more than through the end of January. And then never extend your Christmas offering goal or your Christmas offering date because you did not hit your Christmas offering goal. And then if you find yourself year after year having to extend the date, you want to just extend it on the front end. Again, I've not found any loss of momentum by telling people on the front end, our goal is to raise X amount by January 31st, because I still have a natural built-in deadline at the end of the year to challenge people to give. And generally, we receive about 50% of our giving by December 31, the rest of it comes in to the new year. Over time, you'll begin to see how these numbers work in your church as well, and you can adjust accordingly. Now, let's talk about how you celebrate the gifts you receive. You know, whether you hit the goal you set for your Christmas offering or not, you should never overlook the opportunity to celebrate your church's unified heart of generosity. As attendees give over and above their normal tithes and offerings, acknowledge their efforts. How do you do that? Well, let me give you three ways. First of all, keep them informed throughout the Christmas offering. Now, you don't have to do this every week, but you do need to keep people informed. About halfway through your Christmas offering, for example, report and celebrate how much money has been given so far. Or if you don't want to give the dollar amount, celebrate how many people have given so far. And then thank them for their generosity and encourage them to keep on giving. And then a second, focus on the positive. Stay focused on the positive. Even if you don't raise as much money for your causes as you would like, focus your attention on the significance of what you do raise. And then focus on the number of people who have given, or share a story or a testimony of something that you've heard. If you have permission, you can even use that person's name. But don't try to motivate people through guilt or through announcements that the offering isn't on track or you're going to miss their goal, or start telling sad stories about what's going to happen if you don't hit it. Stay focused on the positive. And then send out thank you letters. I don't normally send a thank you after every gift that we receive week to week, but I do make it a point to send a thank you letter to everyone at the end of the Christmas offering. Whether we hit our goal or not. And of course, if we hit our goal, that's one type of letter. If we don't, I don't mention the goal. I just talk about how many people gave and how much was given. One of the best received ideas for us has been to send a Christmas in February thank you card. In other words, I send out a thank you card in February that looks like a Christmas card, and I thank people for giving to the Christmas offering. And it's kind of neat because they think, why is this Christmas card, this red or green card, coming to me in February? Then they open it up and they realize it's a thank you card for them from that year. And you'll see some samples of that along the way. But celebrating and creating a positive culture is very key. In fact, if I could give you the keys before we move into looking at the very specific step-by-step checklist, I want you to understand that getting the leadership on board is key. Having a clear promotion plan is key. Keeping people updated along the way is key. Celebrating their results throughout the year, that's key. And then let me give you one other key that's not only important for this year's Christmas offering, but it's important for every other Christmas offering. Whether you end the Christmas offering on December 31, December 25, or January 31, or whatever it might be, throughout the following year, a couple times a year, either in the service or in your email newsletter or in updates that you do to the church, update people on how their money is being used that they gave. So if you have a missions emphasis week in the middle of the summer, remind people that the reason you have that is because they gave to the Christmas offering. If you're sending a mission trip somewhere around the world, remind them that part of the reason this mission team is going on this trip is because they gave to the Christmas offering. If you get that new TV for the kids area, on the day you get it in February, pull all the volunteers together and say, look, we've got this new TV, or we've got this new crib, or we've got whatever it is because you gave to the Christmas offering. So throughout the year, remind people that because they gave to the Christmas offering the previous period, we're now able to celebrate these results. And what that does is that makes the Christmas offering part of your culture, and you want to give people a good experience this year. You want to hit the goal this year, even if it's a little lower than you want to make it be, like I talked about earlier. You want to do the best you can this year, and if you give people a good experience, even if you're only able to do some of what I've talked about, you're going to see results, and then you're going to be able to do that year after year after year. And you're going to find yourself in a spot like I found myself in. 10 years after I did my very first Christmas offering, I looked back and I realized we had mobilized millions of dollars for the purpose of the kingdom. And we had had thousands of people in our church who had grown because of that Christmas offering. That we were a better church because we figured out how to plan and implement an effective Christmas offering in our church. And you're going to find that to be the same for you. It's going to make you a better leader. It's going to make you a better disciple. It's going to make your team better. It's going to bring harmony inside of the church, and it's going to lead to God's greater blessing on you because you're now giving to things outside of your local budget. And I wish that for you. And this first part of the audio has been all about walking you through the steps, this listener's guide giving you a big picture overview. And now we're going to turn to the second part and the final part of this resource, which is a step-by-step look at a checklist that we've adapted over and over at our church that then you can adapt to your church. But for now, I want to wish you success in your Christmas offering, and I want to thank you for joining me on this resource, and I look forward to hearing your reports of how much money you mobilize and how many people you grow when you plan and conduct this effective Christmas offering. Now, let's get very, very, very detailed and look at this 40-step checklist. So hopefully by now you've printed that out. My copy that I have in front of me, it printed out on approximately 3 pages. Yours may be formatted just a little different. But this checklist is not a A, B, C, D checklist. Instead, this checklist is one that we've modified and used at our church, and it's broken out by dates. And so these dates may have changed as the calendar has changed, and the dates that I have on the checklist that are currently Sundays, they may not be Sundays for you, but I think you're going to be able to see how this exactly breaks down. In fact, I think this checklist was worth the entire investment in this resource that you made, and if all you do is take this checklist and modify it for your church, then it's going to be very, very powerful. So let's just get started, because you've had an over 2-hour overview and a detailed analysis of the Christmas offering. So I think we'll be able to move rather quickly through this checklist, and then you'll be able to do some additional study. All right. You'll notice that this special offering checklist, we title it the special offering because at the beginning of this checklist, we don't know what the offering is going to be called. So that's why it says by September, you want to pick the name for the special offering. And I've done this so many times now that it seems like by the end of August, by the early part of September, God starts giving me the names for the special offering. God either gives me clarity that we're simply going to call it the annual offering, or God gives me clarity that we're going to call it the Christmas offering, or I start thinking of these names that maybe God wants me to call the offering. These names are usually three-word names. It's at the most four words for this special offering: beyond the city, beyond our borders, embracing our city. A lot of times ours has city in it because we're in a major metropolitan area. Now is the time. That was one that had four words in it or whatever. But I began to think about that name. Then on the first Monday in October, for this particular checklist, looks like that was a Monday, we start the design. We start designing that packet. We start designing that giving envelope. And you notice the packet includes here the letter from me, the overview and the FAQ pages, the giving envelope. And again, many times we just take last year's information, we update it, we improve it, we make it better, we take what we learned and we put it in there. It includes a mailing envelope. It includes the nonprofit indicia that we need to mail this nonprofit. And then you'll notice something new that I didn't mention in the other audio overview, that we've started adding a pin to this. It's simply a customized pen that has the church name on it, the name of the special offering, and we put that in the envelope. And we found that by putting that extra pen in the envelope, it makes the packet more likely to get opened. And so sometimes we've put special coins in the envelope. One year we put a tin of mints. It was customized mints. One year we put a little squishy globe. It was a little stress ball that was small enough to fit inside an envelope. But it's something that makes it lumpy. And what we found is people are more likely to open the lumpy mail. The next week, you see, we get the design to the printer and we order the packets. Now, we're able to turn this around in about a week. And so we've done this so many times. We do it pretty quickly, but we order the packets. We also get the database scheduled, and we make sure that there's packets that are going to be mailed to us for the worship service. If you see that in this checklist, it's packets for the service. We remember, if you remember what I said, we mail the packets to everybody in our database, but then the week before we kick off the Christmas offering and the week of our Christmas offering, we hand those packets out. So we actually leave those particular packets unsealed. We don't lick the envelope. In other words, that way during the service, they don't have to tear open the envelope. We just remember it. That's a small little thing, but that's just an example of how if you work through this checklist, it's going to save you a lot of time because you're going to be able to learn all of our little tips and tricks and mistakes that we've made over the year. During that same week, we get the pen design. We order the pen. We add in the website. If we've got the website by now, it's our church website /whatever. We make sure that's on there. We get the pens for the two packet mailings. Remember, we mail two packets. We mail one at the beginning of the offering. Then we mail another one at the beginning of the year. And so we go ahead and order the pens for both of those packets. And so we save money by ordering for both of those. Then we order pens for the service. Because as you know from the assimilation seminar, we give people pens on their bulletins every week in order to take notes on the message notes and complete their connection card. So we might as well use the special offering pen during the special offering period. So once again, the envelope's in the bulletin. They get the pen that's reinforcing the Christmas offering every week. Then we order the giving envelopes. And we order giving envelopes for the mailing packet. We order giving envelopes for the packets that we're going to hand out at the service. And then most importantly, we order giving envelopes that are going to go into the programs. Now, we call the bulletin a program. We don't use the word bulletin at our church. So it's the giving envelopes for the program. And we're going to put those in the programs starting in November all the way through the first week in February. Because our Christmas offering, of course, runs November through the end of January. So we order enough to have for that. Then by October 20th, we have the overview video completed, and we get that done. Then, going forward, 1st of November, or whatever that first Sunday might be right there, the special offering begins. We turn it on, our online giving. We activate online giving. We mail out the packets that week. And then at the worship service, that first Sunday in November, you see we have the packets are passed out during the service. We have an overview video at the service. We talk about the special offering in our bulletin shell. So we have a special section in the bulletin that's geared toward the offering as well. That following Monday, the packets begin to hit. Then we begin the first time giver follow-up for the special offering. We have a letter that we mail them. We have an email that we send out to them. Now, this parallels with our regular stewardship follow-up as well. So if you're not doing that, it's not a big deal. You can get the stewardship system. You can read that later. But let me draw your attention to the 8th of November. That looks like the first Monday after we rolled out the offering, or the first Tuesday after we rolled out the offering. They get a special offering information in their email, and they get a video that they can watch online that comes from me. Then we begin the weekly thank you emails as part of that as well. The next week at the service, we pass out the programs. There's a flyer in the program about it. So maybe we're not necessarily talking it up in a big way that day. So we put a flyer in there. We have an overview video in the service. Then you see, in November, some date to be determined, we have that leaders party. It says in the checklist, it's a members party, but it really is the top 10% of this leaders party. And there, as part of their next steps, we talk about the Christmas offering. We also give them another packet. Then you see what looks like the service just prior to Thanksgiving. At that worship service, we have an additional flyer in the program. We're not handing out the packets now. We're just putting a flyer in the program each week. And we have a special testimony that's a special Christmas offering mailer, or a moment in the service. Then the next Sunday, the Sunday after Thanksgiving, once again, there's a flyer in the program, and there's a special testimony or video element regarding the special offering. Sometimes these are live testimonies, sometimes they're video. But these testimonies now here that you're seeing in the worship service, they relate to the specific causes that we're giving to. So we have a missions testimony, we have an evangelism testimony, we have a counseling or benevolence testimony, we have a children's ministry testimony, whatever the areas are, we have that. Same thing for the worship service in December. Now, I guess one thing that's not in this checklist is our ongoing email communication that we do. Every Thursday, we do an email newsletter to our people, and that could be in here as well. So that's filtered in. But then you see the first Sunday in December, you can modify that date for whatever it might be when you're listening to this. That first Sunday in December, we have another video in the service, and that's related to one of our elements. Don't get caught up on who's doing that or what we had at this particular checklist. Just understand that's one of the elements. Next service, second week in December, again, a flyer in the program, another element in the service about it. Now we're starting to design the second packet. So we've got that initial packet, but now we need to update it, give it a little bit of a fresh look, update the letter from me about how much is given. We're getting that ready. Then we update and we start thinking about the end of the year giving reminder email. You know, we get a lot of money that comes in at the end of the year, so we want to start thinking here in the middle of December about reminding people, hey, you've got 2 weeks to give before the end of the year. You've got 1 week to give before the end of the year. We want to tell them that the giving they give has to be postmarked, and so we've got this year-end giving reminder email. And again, if you have the stewardship intensive, then that email is available to you there. That third Sunday in December, we have another worship service, flyer in the program, and another video or some focus area as well. By the 20th, the second packet has to be ready to go. It has to be at the printer. Here's what the packet has. Pretty much the same thing as the next one, but you'll notice here we often decide to mail it out first class. Before, we mailed it out nonprofit because we didn't have any money at the beginning, but now if we see the Christmas offering is going to hit or exceed our goal, we want to mail it out first class because this gives us an opportunity to get it there faster. Because of the holiday rush, oftentimes the nonprofit mail gets delayed, but it also gives us a chance to update our database with any returns that we get back through first-class mail. 27th of December, there's an end-of-the-year giving letter that goes out. We talk about the special offering in that. 27th, there's also a special offering flyer in the giving statement mailer that we're sending out. So you can see, we think this through. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to go back and I want you to modify October, November, and December for you. What does that look like? Change these dates to the particular Sundays where it says worship service. You put in the Sundays there, the first Sunday of the year, second Sunday of the year, and that's simply what we do. You know, this is one of our checklists that we develop, but we just evaluate this year after year, and usually at the beginning of January, we have a moment where we look back over the previous 3 months and we update it week to week. Now, if you're just developing your first checklist, just keep a diary of everything that you do for your Christmas offering, then turn that into your checklist the next year. But then our Christmas offering continues into January. And so you see at the first service in January, there's a flyer in the program. There's another special element. Second, special offering packets are mailed right here at the beginning of January. If we're mailing them first class, they're going to be delivered the next day or the day after. Then we have the worship service. We hand out the packets again here at the beginning of the year because there may have been people who came in from the previous 3 months that haven't yet seen the packet. And maybe they got them in the mail, maybe they didn't, but we hand out the packets in the worship service again. Usually we're 60 to 70% toward our goal by this point. So we promote that. We talk about it during that time and we move forward with it. We're still using the special offering pens. Then there's a special offering update email that goes out that week. Then at the next worship service, we have another video, maybe even something on site. We amp it up just a little bit more. We have a special offering pen. Many times during January, just so you know, I do an entire series that's named the name of the Christmas offering. For example, in your resources, you will see that much of the Christmas offering samples that I give you are related to Beyond the City. But then you will see that I also did a series called Beyond the City as well. And we're giving you that series as a bonus on the resources area. By the middle or a little late in January on the 21st, we are designing the thank you card at that next service. We are once again promoting it at the service. And then the last Sunday of January, it looks like on this particular one, there were 5 Sundays in January. Once again, we promoted it in the service. And then there's a last chance email just before our deadline. Now, that is a very powerful checklist, but it's not done. Because once the Christmas offering is over in January, and you can go back and listen to my earlier teaching for what to do when you hit your goal and don't hit your goal and all of that. This is not designed to reteach you everything that I taught you in the first 2 hours of this resource. This is designed to see you designed to show you how it lays out on a calendar. But we're still not done. Because in February, we get the design to the printer, and we have to order the thank you cards. On that first Sunday in February, it's the last day of the special giving envelope or the special pen. And even though the offering ended on the 31st, if the 31st fell during the week, we let that go into the next Sunday because there's always a few people who said, I wanted to give by the 31st, and they bring it to the service. If the Sunday actually falls on the date that it ends, we don't have this extra Sunday to give. But then we mail out the thank you cards, and then at the end of the month, we deactivate online giving. And we have been known to leave online giving open for a couple of weeks after the Christmas offering ends, just to see if there's any stragglers who might just log on to the website and want to give a special gift. And then, as I mentioned, we continue throughout the year to update people on things that the special offering are used for. Well, I've thrown a lot at you. That's about a 40-step checklist that you see there. And again, I want you to take that, look at it in your calendar. You can say there's certain things we just can't do. We may only be able to do one packet. We can't do two. We may not be able to do the Q&A pages. We may not be able to do the pen, but we can do the letter. We can do this. Think about what you can do and then have a plan for how you're going to promote it in each of the services. Have a plan for how you're going to mail it. You then might add to this checklist things that you're going to do electronically or different meetings that you're going to have with your people. You know, one of the things that's not in our checklist is we do go out at the 1st of December and we visit all of the small groups and we talk up the Christmas offering. Now, that's not in this particular checklist because that's in our small group strategy calendar, which we have in the small group resource. So there's other things that might go on in other areas of the church that just automatically happen regarding the Christmas offering. But an effective Christmas offering is a bit like building a runway. You know, if you've ever flown in a private aircraft, you know that it doesn't take a very long runway for a very small plane to take off. So if you're just trying to raise a little bit of money, say one time your weekly budget or two times your weekly budget, you don't need a real long runway because you're trying to take off a Cessna, just a little two-person Cessna. But you also know that if you're going to launch a big multi-passenger plane like a big jumbo jet, then you need a very long runway. And, you know, I've sat on a lot of long runways on international flights. And, boy, that big jumbo jet at JFK Airport, it's rumbling down through there. And it seems like it goes a mile or 2 miles before it ever takes off. I'm sure it's probably not that far. I don't know exactly. But I know it takes a long time for that jumbo jet to get off the ground because there's hundreds of people in there. And there's a lot of cargo and all of that. And it's a big plane. Well, if you're trying to reach a big goal that's 6 times your weekly offering or 8 times your weekly offering, you're going to need a very specific checklist like this that starts 2 months before you need to do your Christmas offering and then continues perhaps even a month afterwards. But it's worth it. It's worth doing this work. It's worth doing this work because it makes you a better leader. It's worth doing this work because it makes you a better administrator. It's worth doing this work because it grows your people. It's worth doing this work because it raises money for the kingdom. It's worth doing this work because a Christmas offering can be a very powerful element to make you into a healthy church. So I thank you for listening to this Christmas offering resource. And I hope this continues to be a dialogue. I hope you'll email me and let me know how you used your Christmas offering. If you feel so inclined, if you're really proud of a video you did or really proud of a packet that you put together, contact me. I'd love to see that. And maybe I can share your ideas with other people in the future who listen to this resource, because we're all in this together. I'm a pastor just like you. I'm sharing what I've learned from my experience, particularly the last decade of raising money for Christmas offerings. I'm sharing with you out of my experience of working with thousands of other churches, and I'm glad now to have this privilege to be able to work with you. And on the website where you got this, or on the case of the resources that you have physically in hand, you find my contact info, and I hope this will be an ongoing dialogue. But if I can, right now, I would like to end this resource by praying for you and praying for your Christmas offering. Heavenly Father, I thank you for each church that is considering this. And the first thing is, I pray that you will give them direction as to whether or not they even should do a Christmas offering. God, I hope they won't do it just because they listen to me, or just because they have a budget shortfall, or whatever it might be. I hope they will do it because you tell them to do it. And then, God, as you guide them, just as you promised, we ask for your wisdom. Give us the wisdom. Things that I've said here that are from you, put those in our heart. Additional things that need to be said by your Spirit, because I didn't cover it because it's too specific for the individual churches listening. I pray your Spirit will guide. And then I pray you'll be with the leaders as they model generosity, as they put together the plan. Be with the printers and the partners and the post office and all that go into making this thing work. And then most importantly, God, we would pray that you would use us to make a difference in your kingdom, because we give to this Christmas offering, we give to our regular tithes and offerings. So bless these churches, bless these leaders because of this resource. Thank you for using it. Thank you for what you're going to do in the future. Thank you for your love for us, and thank you for your generosity toward us by giving your Son, Jesus, to us. Thank you for Christmas, and we pray this in Jesus' name, and I hope you'll join me in saying amen.